Blog Talk Radio.
Take my love, take my land, take me where I cannot stand. I don't care, I'm still free. You can't take the sky from me. Take me out to the black, tell them I ain't coming back. Burn the land and boil the sea. You can't take the sky from me. There's no place I can be since I found serenity. You can't take the sky from me.
Offered by the delegate from Kentucky. All those in favor will signify by saying aye. Those opposed, no.
The decision caused an immediate uproar, but RNC Chair Ryan Priebus was in no mood to take a roll call.
Without objection, the motion to reconsider is laid upon the table. Get to proceed with the order of business.
Mr. Trayvon, point of order.
It's unfair to us. We sat here and objected. He said, are there any objections? We objected. You know, it's like, why even ask the question at that point?
Maine got screwed with half their delegates. More than half, actually. That's why their governor's not here today. Because he said he wouldn't come down unless their delegates got seated. Half of them got taken away, and they were put in, replaced by people that the Republican Party, the RNC picked.
Several members of the Maine delegation walked off the floor in protest after the convention decided to replace 10 of its 24 delegates.
It's a farce!
Convention is a farce!
They duck in there talking about we support our soldiers. They got rid of 7 of them on our delegation. 2 recently serving in Afghanistan and Iraq. How dare they? Shame on them!
Good morning, everybody. Good morning. The eyes have it.
Good evening. You are live for a special midweek show with Tex and Rex. Irreverent. Relevant. And radioactive conservatism with a bite. I'm your host, Rex, broadcasting to you from the Imperial City, where your congressional critters have just drawn more blood from your children's children's children.
And this is Tex, broadcasting from high above Houston in the Crystal Cathedral. And we have a special show tonight. We're broadcasting at a different time than we normally broadcast due to the upcoming RNC election for the new chairman. And so, Rex, what do we got this evening?
Well, what we got this evening is that tomorrow, Thursday, January 24th at noon, is when nominations for RNC chair are due. So tomorrow is when a challenger for the current chair, Rince Priebus, will be made, and anybody who's nominated tomorrow will be in contention for the vote on Friday amongst the 168 committee members. Now, the interesting thing is doing a little history that was shared to me by Chris Schiffler from Coalition of Freedom. If we go back to, for example, the 1993 chairman election, we had 5 people in contention and 3 rounds of voting before Haley Barbour became the chair. If you go back to 1997, We had, I think, seven people in contention until round six. In 2009, we had five people in contention, and it was round six before the Honorable Michael Steele made it as chairman. And, of course, we know that Michael Steele went on to resounding victories in 2010 for the Republican Party and was rewarded with a swift kick in the butt, which was the 2011 election, which had one, two, three, four, five people, including Prince Pubic and Michael Steele, went seven rounds. And Rinsey won. So, you know, there's usually some kind of electoral process and several rounds of voting and negotiations and such before we get a chair. Well, right now the only person whose name is in contention, Tex, is little Prince Pubic, who you and I had the privilege of raiding his hotel room, penthouse hotel room in Tampa, when he was there, forcing the rules, the draconian rules that basically wipe out any grassroots voice in the party. And now we've got, he's the only one, but there is a courageous man, committee man from Maine. We've done two of our last Sunday shows talking about him, and that is Mark Willis of Maine, who has responded to the grassroots request for somebody to stand up to Priebus and replace him. And Mark Willis stepped up, and the good people from Nevada and the good people from Maine have made up their minds to nominate him tomorrow. But the Republican Party rules are, Tex, that you need two committee men from three states in order to be a nomination, and so far that third state has been elusive to my knowledge. Go ahead.
Wasn't it better if there is no choice and everybody just applauds for the next guy in line, because it shows unanimity to the outside and to the opposition, and it makes us look more formidable if we don't actually have to have a choice on who the chairman is, doesn't it?
Did you say moronimity?
Yes.
Yeah, well, that's the line that they're giving. In fact, it's pretty baffling what this is about. This is the same crap that they're pulling, that they pulled at Tampa, where they look, let's face it, Ron Paul and Newt Gingrich, who both could have been nominated from the floor. In fact, we know for a fact Ron Paul was Tampa, were both a long shot at securing the nomination. I mean, let's face it, Ron Paul is very popular, very principled, constitutional guy, conservative Republican, but he was still a long shot. But somehow, the Ginsburg, Priebus, Romney, Rove machine had to make sure that there wasn't even a challenge. So they illegally acclaimed Romney. Well, it looks as if, you know, little Prince Pubic took a cue from that, because Breitbart's reporting that he flew to Nevada on Monday night to persuade National Committeeman James Smack to drop his support for Mark Willis. So, you know, what's the big deal if Mark isn't even in nomination, because we've only got two states, and Rince has already stated that he's got, you know, 130 of the votes locked up and you only need 85. Why is he flying all the way out to Nevada to – I mean, we know he likes red ball gags, and there's probably some activities that he can engage in Nevada that he can't engage in any other state. But, but why did he fly out there to convince this guy to drop his support? You know, what's that all about?
Well, it sounds like he wants unanimity, and he doesn't want even one or two states to try to put someone else's name in the ballot, which shows a level of paranoia about his position and the need to show this unanimity. Now, in Mitt Romney's case, I guess I could understand it at the convention, because, you know, Mitt Romney paid good money to buy off the Republican Party. The last thing he would want, what kind of money did he spend if he's got, you know, a floor challenge, I guess is what the party was thinking. But unfortunately, the members of the party who actually make up the party, the grassroots, that's what they wanted. And Morton Blackwell from the Virginia delegation, they were working on the Standing Committee on Rules, and they had adopted some changes that would have opened up the Republican Party to more of the grassroots-type power structures that would have helped and empowered the grassroots and strengthened the party at the grassroots level. Unfortunately, other forces within the party and one of the mustache-twirling members of the Romney campaign is a Ben Ginsburg, they decided to enact the rules that essentially would have, well, that did shut the grassroots out of the decision-making power within the party, so that essentially the RNC controls the RNC and the grassroots don't matter. So your voice doesn't count. You're expected to go into the voting booth and vote, and you are not expected to have any sort of influence over the party whatsoever under the current set of rules. And what we need is new visionary leadership within the RNC that doesn't see the Republican Party as their domain and their social club, to which it's our job to come like the Magi to the Christ child's manger and adore them and what they do, but rather we have a voice in the party, and we affect the direction that the party should go, and we don't take orders from Ryan Scribus or whoever the RNC wants to pick to be the delegates to go applaud their candidate in and to get the candidate who has the most money so that they can go pay off the people, the higher echelons of the Republican Party, so that things go smoothly, and we always go with the next guy in line, and we never let the voice of the people be heard.
Hmm. That sounds fantastic. Tex, you know, this word grassroots has been bandied about a lot. You know, what exactly is the grassroots? And I've heard it. And I even heard, you know, back when, what's his name? Dr. Dean was running pretty strong in the Democratic primaries before, you know, the yeah situation in the, you know, allegedly that's what wiped him out. You know, there was something called netroots. So what is netroots? What is grassroots? Can you...
Well, grassroots is you and me. It's your local yokels, the voting members of America who pay attention to politics and who are the activists. So they go hold the signs, they go knock door to door, they pound the ground, they work the precincts, they man, you know, they volunteer to watch the votes, they go work in the county offices all across the country in order to make sure that the party is a success. And often it's without pay, often it's a thankless task. But they do these things because they're the believers, and they go advocate for the party with their friends, even with people who disagree with them, and, you know, they bear the brunt of, you know, what's going on within the party and the national discourse at the time. And the thing is, if you cut those people out and they don't have a voice, why are they doing it? What's the point?
Well, not only what's the point, but aren't these people volunteering their time, money, and energy to basically do all the heavy lifting for the candidates?
Pretty much, yeah, exactly. That's what they're doing. But the thing is, after having worked for the party for years and done these sorts of things, then eventually they get the honor to pay more money in order to go to the actual convention, where in the new conception they will have no voice whatsoever, and if they do express their opinion and the heads of the RNC don't happen to like what they hear, they'll just remove you by fiat, and you will have paid all that money for nothing. I would say that makes for a very unhappy grassroots supporter, and probably someone who no longer will support the party in the future.
Yeah, I agree, and let's think about that for a minute, because, you know, you're saying that grassroots is kind of a blanket term that covers anybody, whether they be, you know, extreme liberals, socialists, communists, hardcore conservatives, gun rights people, pro-life, whatever. The grassroots is kind of a blanket statement for all the local activists and people who support the party and get other people to come out and vote and do all the heavy lifting without getting paid. So,
well, yes, all parties have to have a grassroots to some extent. Otherwise, why are they a political party? Unless you happen to be the Republican Party, the modern Republican Party, in which I guess now they don't need a grassroots anymore. They just need a bunch of really smart people up at the top who appear on the Sean Hannity show, who have a lot of really wealthy donors who sit around and tell all the zombie Republicans what to do, and apparently we're all going to jump off the cliff for these guys. That is the new modern Republican Party. But traditionally, most parties, successful parties, actually rely on grassroots support, which is support of the individual voter an interested American and concerned citizen to go out and do things for the party.
All right. So now Mark Willis is a committee man from Maine, a quote, Ron Paul delegate. So, you know, in the current incarnation of the Republican Party, not, quote, mainstream Republican. So does this mean that, you know, if anybody supports Mark Willis, we are de facto Ron Paulers? Or is Mark Willis standing up to reverse the Ginsburg, Grove, Sununu, Priebus, draconian rules that wipe out all grassroots, meaning Tea Party, gun rights, traditional conservatives, pro-lifers, libertarians, conservatarians, Ron Paul supporters? Is he standing up for all the grassroots, or is he merely a Ron Paul sleeper?
You throwing that one to me?
I'm throwing it out there rhetorically because obviously that's not the case. But I've been hearing these objections from quote, Republicans that this is a Ron Paul guy. Why would we want to support him? And then this other crap about, well, he violated the rule by being on the ballot in Maine. Mark Willis didn't put himself on the ballot in Maine. And why didn't he take himself off the ballot? Hey, guess what? If somebody gets you on the ballot, you can't take yourself off the ballot. People will vote for you. It's how you draft a politician. Now, of course, you know, if you win and you actually don't want to serve in the position that the people elected you to, you could always turn down the office. But you can't get yourself off the ballot if someone puts your name on there. So, you know, that's garbage. You know, that's garbage. And then, you know, the other interesting thing to me, Tex, is, you know, let's just say that in some sense he violated that rule. Let's just say that he did. Did Rince Priebus violate any rules in Tampa? I mean,
are there rules in the Republican Party anymore? I just thought it was, you just buy everybody off and then accuse anybody who stands up and says something against you, accuse them of some nonsensical charge to mow them over and get them out of the way. That's the modern Republican Party.
As far as
the grassroots. Yeah, I mean, this is the problem. You know, okay, so Ron Paul has a great grassroots support among various voting blocs of the country, most notably young people, but it kind of goes beyond just young people and gets into more of the what would be considered traditional conservatives, social conservatives, and then also fiscal conservatives. So you have a broad range of support, but the party leadership doesn't like the Ron Paul message of limited government, reducing spending, not going and invading every country across the world for a variety of reasons, including the fact that we don't really have the money for it, and it doesn't get us anything. And so they try to demonize him and his supporters in order to try to create a sense of otherness within the party that they don't really belong. Now, some of our listeners, and perhaps many of our listeners, don't consider themselves Ron Paul supporters. They're more Newt Gingrich supporters, or they're traditional Republicans, Reagan Republicans, if you will. But the thing is, a lot of you are Tea Partiers, or were during the 2010 election, and look what the party's doing to the Tea Party now, marginalizing it, trying to get rid of it, eliminating districts of Tea Party candidates and supporters. And guess what? If you're a Tea Partier, you're next in line after the Ron Paul people for people who've got to be drummed out of the party, or at least silenced. And what is this Republican Party going to be if it doesn't consist of Tea Partiers, who I always thought was the bedrock of the Republican Party, who won them the majority in 2010, if the party doesn't consist of the Tea Party, and if the new blood that's being infused in the party through the Liberty Movement, they don't want that blood transfusion, and they're trying to kick them out and expose them, as I saw happen at my own Senate District Convention, mm-hmm. Washington Congressional
I saw that, too. Yep.
Where, you know, they were coming up, and anybody who looked young, I guess I look young, who is running to be a delegate, they were coming up and asking if you supported Ron Paul because they were going to expose you if you did, you know. Well, what kind of party is that? That's a dying organization. You're bleeding out your most fervent support across the country, and look what's happening to your party and its support within the nation. It's just falling away. You can't run a political party based on a bunch of money people behind the scenes trying to run everything while pissing all over the grassroots. It's just not going to work. It's a formula designed for failure, and that's what Reince Priebus wants to put in place, and I assume he's hoping that, well, I was unanimously reelected, so the Republican Party, all this talk of discontent within the Republican Party is overblown, and everybody's really happy. Yeah, everybody's really happy with the super swell job that I'm doing.
Yeah.
He's an accountant, for God's sake.
Well, why don't we make him the treasurer then? Make him the treasurer of the party. Why is he the chairman? Why is he involved in the rules? He should be involved in the bean counting and the fundraising, you know? I mean, I don't know. The whole thing is just chaotic. But what I find interesting, Tex, is, well, first of all, we've got a caller that I'm going to bring on. And the interesting thing is that, you know, a lot of people – or anticipating some of the callers we have. In fact, we might be hearing from Mark Willis shortly. Just to remind everybody, Tex and Rex are always irreverent, trying to be relevant, and we're frequently radioactive. We don't do interviews, so everybody who comes on this just to fend for themselves, but we like to have people come on and give us interesting facts about grassroots activism, how to reform the electoral system, and hopefully how to fix any party, and I don't care which party it is, Republican or otherwise, that is trying to put forward a conservative agenda. And this is precisely the kind of coalition building that needs to happen, and our next guest is somebody who's building coalition.
Conan, what is best in life? To crush your enemies, see them driven before you, and to hear the lamentation of your women.
That is good. That is good.
That's Trog from Coalition of Freedom. Chris, you are live with Tex and Rex. And, you know, here, let me ask you a question because, you know, you're talking about coalitions and conservatarianism and all that kind of stuff. What exactly is so friggin' alien about Ron Paul and those who support Ron Paul in the Republican Party? First of all, didn't Ron Paul serve like 24 of the last 36 years as a Republican congressman from Texas, where Tex lives? And second of all, what's so friggin' unconservative, not un-Republican or Republican, I'm saying conservative, what's unconservative about Ron Paul's positions and Ron Paul's supporters? Explain this one to me.
Yeah, it's mind-boggling to me. You know, when Tex took that little vacation and we did that Presidents of Christmas Past, and you played some of the old radio shows, and I was looking up, you know, the data on these guys. I mean, Ron Paul sounds just like our early turn of the century Republicans that were in power, you know, and it's amazing to me that somebody like him, who speaks about the Constitution, state sovereignty, limited government, get the hell out of endless wars and illegal wars, and pay attention to taking care of our own country. That's kind of what America was built on. In fact, our founding fathers were pretty clear on that stuff. I don't know how they turned him into, in the public's eye, they turned him into a nutcase. And he's not. He's extremely conservative. He's just very frugal. And I guess, according to Rick Santorum, when they were in power under Bush, spending like hell with 5 debt ceiling increases and getting ready to launch a never-ending war on terror around the world, you know, he said, thank God we're no longer the party of small government, quote unquote. In fact, I got the damn video if anybody wants to hear it. These people are the people who have demonized Sarah Palin, the Tea Party, Ron Paul, the Christians, the right-wingers. You know what I'm saying? These people are the enemy. Well, guess what? They're in the Republican Party. You don't have to spend all day posting Obama crap on Facebook groups. All you got to do is post about your own party, and you got it covered right there. You know, when you make that list of 2014, here's what you need to do. It's obvious the Dems, you know, of course, we got to get the Dems out and replace them with, you know, somebody, you know, from the right. Okay, well, here's the other list. All Bush-era rhinos must go now. And it starts now, because 2014 is next year. I mean, this is so important, folks. Did I answer your question?
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, I wasn't really asking you the question because I knew what you were going to say. It was more for the benefit of it's more for the benefit of anybody who happens to troll our show who, you know, might hear, you know, Ron Paul and go, "Oh, these guys are crazy pot smoking libertarians." I mean, you know, for anybody that's new to the show, we all got hooked up fighting to get Speaker Newt Gingrich to the nomination. And, you know, I would have loved to seen a battle between Speaker Newt Gingrich and Congressman Ron Paul. That's fantastic. That's the kind of stuff I want to see. But you know, but the way that Ron Paul's supporters were treated, I mean, technically, the way, you know, we were treated as well, but it's just we didn't have as well organized a ground game to go as far as they did, was disgusting. And it showed you that the rules that they've put forward, the people that are running the show, the John Boehners, the John Sununus, and all those other, you know, douchebags, they're not interested in conservatism. They're not interested in the Constitution. They're not interested in the grassroots. They're not interested in Mr. and Mrs. America. They are interested in talking conservative and running whatever little fiefdom they've managed to carve out for themselves in politics. Typical corporatists.
They're interested in just running like the Republican Party into the ground, as far as I can tell.
Well, yeah. I don't know if they're. Yeah, I mean, they're doing that. They're doing that. And you
there's
know what?
Something,
maybe,
there's something
maybe that's what they want.
Sinister.
They want to lose.
Yeah, there's something sinister this way comes. I'm telling you guys. I sat back on days and I'm just thinking nobody can be this stupid. They're going to lose millions of voters with this, from Boehner getting reelected to Priebus if he gets reelected. Are you kidding me? With the amount of data that's been posted about Priebus and Boehner and the convention and what happened through the whole primary. I swear they want to destroy the party. I don't know what else to say.
Yeah. Well, I mean, just think of it this way, right?
Any sufficiently advanced incompetence is indistinguishable from malice, as I've said before.
Yeah.
And some of these, quote, Republicans at the top who are the next in line came from the Democrat Party. Remember when Charlie Crist was going to be the new face of the Republican Party and he was a rising star within the GOP? He's a Democrat now. What does that tell you about the leaders who were puffing this guy up, you know?
Yep.
Down here in Texas, Rick Perry is former Democrat, you know?
Carl Rove,
yeah.
Yep.
All these guys, they came from the other side, you know?
There's no difference. Yeah.
And what are their policies? The same policies.
Tex, you nailed it. I mean, think of it this way, right? Back in 2000, right? This is... this is the contentious race between Clinton's heir apparent, you know, bloated Al Gore. Actually, I don't think he was bloated back then, but you know what I mean. And the Reagan Bush heir, Bush Jr. Right now, Bush ran as a conservative Christian businessman with a non-interventionist, non-nation-building foreign policy. You know, smaller government spending cuts, and then, you know, brought us Karl Rove's compassionate conservatism. First alleging that, one, somehow prior to the advent of George W. Bush, conservatism was not compassionate, it was mean and evil. And two, compassionate conservative turned out to be nothing more than something to the left of John F. Kennedy's Democratic Party. And they went on a spending spree that brought us a complete, you know, wiped out crash. And then this conservative came out and said this:
"I've abandoned free market principles to save the free market system."
What the hell is that? I mean, how is that even remotely conservative? I've abandoned the free market. No conservative in their right mind will ever say, "I've abandoned the free market." Would you agree?
Yeah, that's insane.
I 100% agree. And look, it's a fundamental misunderstanding as to what conservatism is by the leaders, the so-called leaders of the conservative party. So, for instance, Lindsey Graham, who's well within the Washington insider Republican establishment, said that, "I'm tired of people saying that Romney didn't win because he wasn't conservative enough. We're not losing elections because we're not hard-ass enough." Notice he starts with conservative. And in his mind, conservative is linked with the concept of hard ass. Okay? So this is a problem with our leadership and how they view the Tea Party, how they, well, you know, Ron Paul movement, they just view them as kooks, I would assume, but a libertarian other that needs to be gotten rid of. But the Tea Party come across and Newt Gingrich come across as hard asses, and we don't want to be hard asses. We want to be soft asses, I guess, or, you know, snuggle up to the Democrats and just go along with whatever the heck they want to do. This is a party without an ideology, and that is adrift, and it will lose if it continues down this path. And I assume that's their intention, is to overtake the Republican Party and just turn it into the party of Me Too, mm-hmm. and not have any sort of ideological differences within Washington. That, as far as I can tell, is the goal, because they certainly don't seem to be doing anything to address the decline of the party. And to the extent that they do want to do something, they think that we need to go further left and we need to become the Democrat Party and adopt gender and, you know, identity politics and group politics within our party in order to be successful. Meanwhile, our party has been massively successful in organizing people along ideological grounds on things that the Americans believe in, which is the concept of liberty and limited government, reducing government spending. We have won massive victories, and we lose every time we run away from those principles. One of the reasons that Barack Obama won, not just the historic nature of his candidacy, but he was talking about the profligate spending of George W. Bush. And that resonated yep. with a lot of Reagan Democrats within their party who said that the Republican Party is the spendthrift party, and that's how the Democrats were running against the Republicans, talking about all the debt that George Bush ran up as a result of all the foreign wars. And it resonated with people like, yeah, we don't have this money. We need to stop spending this money. And so they voted for Barack Obama.
No, you got
and
it.
Now,
you're absolutely.
Yeah, and now... now our party is running away from the coalition that's won its elections and trying to adopt the Democrat model, which doesn't win. The Democrats won because they adopted the original Reagan model, and now we're going to adopt theirs. It's idiotic.
And the crazy thing is, I mean, not only is this, you know, are these this agenda that's contrary to conservatism that the Republicans are putting forward, but the very simple fact that just from a practicality standpoint, if you're going to alienate new, young, diverse people that are coming into your party, and you're not going to listen to your rank-and-file grassroots activists who are the ones doing the heavy lifting to elect your candidates for your party, then you're basically undermining your own potential for success. And these rules essentially alienate so many people, Tea Party, libertarians, conservatarians, pro-life Christians, whatever part of the big tent Republican Party that brought Reagan in 1980 with huge numbers, and Gingrich in 94 with the first Republican majority in 60 years, that coalition, that big tent, is being marginalized to the point where why would anybody bother to support this party? And unless these rules are changed, and unless the party decides to embrace this big tent philosophy again, we're just going to see crushing defeat after crushing defeat. The Democrats are going to grow more powerful, and of course, statism and socialism is going to spread. Well, you know, thanks to the call of the grassroots that this courageous man from Maine answered the call to challenge Rince Priebus, who, along with Ginsburg and Rove and Sununu, are the masterminds of these rules that not only alienate the principles of conservatism, but are contrary to the very effective strategies that could bring you victories. And so we're privileged to have this gentleman on the line with us. Mr. Mark Willis, you are live with Tex and Rex and Chris from Coalition of Freedom. How are you?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Well, we're
fired
show,
up.
Mark.
Excellent. Waiting for you, man.
Yeah, I know.
You're a hero.
It's been pretty busy, so here I am. So, guys, I'm glad you're so patient for me to finally get on the air with you. Very interesting day today.
Please tell us what's going on.
Okay, so today we kind of got settled in the first day of the winter meeting, and we had a press conference at 1 o'clock today. We had a lot of the grassroots supporters there, and it was really a good turnout. We had some local news there. Some RNC members showed up just to kind of check in and listen to what's going on. And, you know, well, you know, there were some questions and we maybe disagreed on a few things, but we talked about it afterwards. And, you know, my 8 points plan is making its way through the RNC, and people are, you know, reading it, and people coming up to me, and, you know, people who might, you know, not necessarily, you know, even vote for me are saying, hey, I agree that a lot of these points have merit, and these do need to be incorporated into the Republican Party if we want to try to save it and keep the grassroots involved and do all those things that we need to do to show good faith that we're going to keep people in the party and show that we're making some changes and not just forget about them and, you know, expect those people to come back out in November and vote.
Well, that's encouraging, Mark. What I find fascinating is, you know, even if some of these people aren't inclined to vote for you, I'm just baffled by the very simple fact that these are the rules that were put through, I believe, illegitimately, with Rince Priebus as chairman. And, you know, look, Rince does some things very well. And, you know, when it comes to fundraising and managing the books, I think he's great. I think he'd be a phenomenal treasurer for the party. But how does anybody expect the chairman who oversaw the implementation of these rules that severely damage not only conservatism, in my opinion, but just the chance for the party to actually win, why did he think that he would be the one who'd be willing to change those rules back? I mean, that's just baffling to me.
Yeah, you know, we got a little indication of a couple things today. We, you know, specifically on the rules, you know, the rules are one of the points in my plan of talking about, you know, really just scrapping them all together and just going back to the 2008 rules. Because you hear some people say, well, yeah, they're all bad. And some people say, well, you know, let's keep Rule 12 because that's the rule that can, you know, allow us to change things. And my aspect is, you know, it's either all wrong or all right. You just can't cherry pick rules out of it and say, well, everything else is wrong, but, you know, we'll just keep Rule 12 around because we want to use that because that can change things. You know, this is not the way it goes. So today in the Standing Committee on Resolutions at 3 o'clock this afternoon earlier, I submitted last week a resolution to restore the GOP grassroots. And this was exactly the same resolution that had passed in the state of Maine with our GOP committee in Maine. So what I did with it, I just took the word Maine out of it and replaced it with Republican Party. And I promised the state of Maine that I would go ahead and submit this. And we'll see what happens. Well, fast forward, the room was pretty packed. You know, a lot of people in there, and there were different resolutions, and they take it one at a time alphabetically by state. So I was kind of halfway through it, and they called on my resolution. So I stood up, and you get about 3 minutes to explain to the committee and to the larger audience there what your resolution is all about. And so I took a few minutes to explain what these rules really mean to the grassroots. And in 2016, if they're not repealed, and why I believe that they needed to be replaced, you know, altogether. And then I went in and talked about it. You know, some of the different states have passed similar resolutions: Nevada, Texas, and North Carolina, Minnesota, and others. And then basically, they didn't even bring it up for a motion for a vote. It was pretty much dead on arrival when it got to the committee. And they talked to me ahead of time, and they said, you know, we're probably going to rule your resolution out of order because it's related to the rules. But then I talked through that with them. That didn't go too well. So they actually let me speak. But in the end, the resolution was shot down, and I kind of expected it would be. You know, it's just to them, it's just too strong a language at this point. Although they'll talk to you on the side, say afterwards, and say, hey, you know, we really agree. People say, well, we really agree with you. These rules are going to have to change. And you know what, Mark? In the end, you'll probably end up getting your way for most of the stuff. But this is just not the time to be passing these resolutions, et cetera. So, you know, I can't explain exactly, you know, where everybody's coming from on this other than they want to take their time and do it more incrementally. I just don't know. But, you know, unless you keep that pressure on, you know, George Patton said, pressure makes diamonds. And if you don't keep the pressure on, then we just don't know if they're going to do the right thing. I hope they would, but you know what? I'm just not going to take any chances.
No, and we appreciate that. Go ahead, Tex.
Well, Mark, and we appreciate your efforts and everything that you're doing up there, to try to get to be the RNC chair where you have a much better position to affect the changes that we need, but also to advocate from the floor as a member of the RNC. So we definitely support that. But one of the things I'm curious about is what is the psychology of the current members of the RNC who are sitting there? Why does there seem to be, from what we can tell from the outside, which is mostly from press accounts, maybe you get some blog accounts with some people on the inside, but why does there seem to be this complacency about Reince Priebus being a shoe-in, at least it seems from the outside, to be the next chairman when he has such a dismal record of failure, in my opinion, particularly over this last election, which could have easily been won and should have easily been won by the GOP? We just had such lackluster leadership, and wouldn't that failure necessitate a change in the leadership? Are people just completely complacent? Are they disgruntled and, you know, grumbling, you know, murmuring in the break room, if you will? Or are they just like, okay, well, we're just going to support this guy because we don't want to create any waves?
Well, probably all the above. You know, it depends who you talk to, right? So, you know, I think for the most part, they think that Reince has done a pretty good job as far as balancing the checkbook and fundraising, and that's one part of the job, right? So I think that's a good component of it. And, you know, so that's something that a lot of people look at. And I guess they just want to, you know, they want to give him two more years to see what he can do. I don't really know. You know, I guess you'd have to talk to the individual members to see, you know, what's going through their minds on that. I don't want to try to speak for anybody else.
Yeah.
You know, I just know that, you know, in our organization and in the corporate world, you know, with that kind of performance, you know, people would be talking differently, I guess you could say.
Yeah, well, Mark, I don't know that anybody has the courage that you have to actually call into the Tex and Rex show, because we probably let him have it. the interesting thing to me is that, you know, we're all so very nice, and that's wonderful, you know. But and just a little background, Mark, we got hooked up and started this show when we were witnessing what was going on in the primaries. We were Newt Gingrich supporters with Ron Paul sympathies, but we wanted Newt Gingrich. And then when we saw how Newt Gingrich was being treated, how Ron Paul was being treated, and then, you know, we were fighting for a brokered convention, which I believe, you know, we had, and it was stolen at the last minute by illegal moves. It was just baffling. So, you know, we have a lot of respect for Newt Gingrich, and you know, Ron Paul's always been spot on principle, and Newt Gingrich has been a very, very good at strategy. I mean, he managed to get victories where people thought it wasn't possible. And yet both of them are being essentially silenced, and their supporters are being silenced. Well, there's an interesting quote by Newt Gingrich where he says, "I think one of the great problems we have in the Republican Party is that we don't encourage you to be nasty. We encourage you to be neat, obedient, loyal, and faithful, and all those Boy Scout words, which would be great around a campfire, but are lousy in politics." And, you know, all this nice stuff about what's going on, it seems to me that, you know, we're just spending so much time being polite to each other and polite to our committeemen and representatives. The grassroots are not going to put up with this kind of marginalization, and you're either the party's going to bleed out, or it's going to have to reverse course pretty darn quick, and I just don't see the time for niceties. I mean, this is a desperate situation.
Yeah, Rex. Yeah. I mean, to support one of the things that Gingrich is saying, a political party is about a battle of ideas. And if you give up the battle part of that, eventually you give up the ideas, and that's where the Republican Party is. It neither battles nor does it have ideas currently.
Yeah, you're right about that. Nobody really wants a battle right now. You can tell. I mean, you know, but it is interesting, you know, after I got done with that resolution today, I read through Rule 12 and Rule 16 and Rule 40, and I'm telling you, there were some people in that room whose jaws dropped when I explained what these rules stand for and what it means. I'm telling you, there were some people in that room that had probably never heard that before or just didn't.
Why?
I connected the dots for a few people. I'm sure of that today. So,
I don't understand. I don't, Mark, I'm sorry, but I don't understand why from the RNC convention to this point in time, why 168 people haven't been exposed to the truth about what's happening to the party. It just blows me away. I mean, why? I mean, this what I'm, you know, I don't mean to be so naive, but come on. Don't they understand what the party just did?
Yeah, what you were talking about, everybody, you know, being nice. I mean, everybody is very polite to each other, but, you know, when it comes to things like the resolution, when it comes to things like the rules, and you know, when it comes to things of principle, things that need to change, like my 8-point plan, I'm not afraid to take the gloves off and say what needs to be said. And you know, you hear the funny thing is when you talk to the members privately and no one else is around, they're kind of like, yeah, Mark, good job, man. I really like to hear what you said today. So, not everybody, but a lot of people, even some, you know, rather what you guys would probably call hardcore establishment, you know, pulled me aside and said, you know what, you're on to something here. But you get everybody together in the group, and it's a little different. So I can't, you know, you can't wave a magic wand and make it there and see something else. It is what it is. And you've got to work in that environment. But when things need to be called out and changed and no one else is willing to do it, then you got to sound off, you know, and you got to make it loud and clear for people, because we don't, you know, we're running out of time. We don't have a lot of time to get this right.
No, well, there's no time. Mark, the simple fact is that, I mean, what they have to understand is that, you know, yes, some people are going to work within the party, but the party's been bleeding out membership for a long time, and it's relying really on conservative and conservatarian and libertarian independents. And I got to tell you something, the vibe I'm getting, they're like, you know, to hell with the GOP. So if these rules stand, it's not only a matter of procedure, it's a matter of there's not going to be enough voters to secure victory. So it's undermining the very existence of the party, not only the conservative direction that it's going in. But I think it's fascinating to me that some of these people are not aware of these things, and I'm glad that you're bringing that to their awareness. But you know, I would like to give you the opportunity to address some things that we've brought up on the show, because some people are questioning your run, which I find fascinating that for the first time in 20 years we're having a election for an RNC chair, and that there is no challenger at this moment. It's usually there's at least six of them. It's just baffling. But you know, they're saying one, which is fascinating to me, that you, Mark Willis, violated the rules, as opposed to pointing out the rules that the party itself violated by being Ron Paul's vice presidential candidate on the main ballot. And from what I understand, and if you could clarify, you didn't get yourself on that ballot, and neither did Ron Paul.
That's
and
right.
If I'm not mistaken, once you get on a ballot, someone gets you on a ballot, you can't take yourself off. I mean, you could certainly, you know, not accept the office, but you can't get yourself off that ballot, can you?
I don't know. I decided after I was told about it to just do nothing and keep it quiet, and that was the best course of action. So I didn't even look into it. I just let it go.
Okay. But the fact is that you weren't given a vote in Tampa, so you couldn't support or not support Romney at the convention. And then, of course, you're obviously, as a committeeman, supporting the party even when it might make mistakes. So that qualifies you as a committeeman to be nominated, if we could just get one more state to have the courage that you've shown and that the people in Nevada and the people in Maine have shown, to at least have a challenge to essentially what Reince Priebus is representing to rank-and-file voters, especially grassroots activists and independents, without whom the Republican Party is not going to win future elections.
Right. So, you know, we have, like you said, we have two states right now. We have Maine and Nevada, and I'm still looking for a third, and I have until 5 o'clock tomorrow to get it. So, you know, less than 24 hours, I've still, you know, there's still some people to talk to who are coming in, flying in. And so, you know, we'll do what we can tomorrow, see if I can get that third state. If not, then that's it. Then no one else has stepped up. No one else, you know, people thought, you know, somebody would step up, you know, early on, but maybe Michael Steele or J.C. Watts or, you know, maybe others, but it just didn't happen.
Well, Mark, I would say come what may tomorrow, and, you know, I certainly would encourage as many states as possible to support your candidacy, if nothing else, in order to allow the committee members to actually have a debate about the direction of the party. Because if there is no debate, if there's no controversy, then it's like the car is put in neutral. We've come off a failure. And here we've reelected the exact same leadership that brought us here. So we have John Boehner again as Speaker of the House. And then if we end up with Reince Priebus as chairman of the RNC, well, things don't look good going into 2014. So I would say, regardless of what happens, hopefully they mix things up. But, you know, I would encourage you at the RNC to raise the uncomfortable questions, to, you know, be a voice not necessarily of dissent always, but dissent is often good, but at least a voice that's raising questions and sparking debate, because you will encourage others to do the same. And, you know, if you have new members coming into the committee, the natural reaction is for everyone at first to be quiet and figure out how things work and keep their head down. But what you want to do is encourage that vigorous debate to start happening sooner rather than later, particularly when we're in an organization that just suffered what I think is not only an embarrassing but an easily avoidable defeat in 2012 if they had just listened.
Yeah, you know, and I'm new. I mean, I'm one of the new members, so, but that hasn't stopped me. So, and we have others up there. We have Ashley from Maine, the youngest RNC member as well. She introduced me today. She's solid with her beliefs. You know, we have Diana Bork from Nevada, and James Snack from Nevada, and you know. There are some people up there who are willing to put their necks on the line and say what needs to be said. So I'm not alone. You know, there's not as many as we'd like, but there are some good people up there that are working with. And, you know, for the most part, you know, everybody up there, I mean, I think even, you know, people that we disagree with, they're genuinely nice people. But you do have to kind of, you know, take them by the hand and lead them to certain places where they're just, I don't know if they're just not aware of everything that's going on or what, but they, you know, on a particular issue, in this case, the 8 points that I brought up as part of my plan, one of the biggest things that I'm getting a lot of good responses from is the tech part of it, where we have to win the tech war. For 2014 and beyond, if the Democrats creamed us on the tech war as far as the election software and what Obama and his team did versus what the Romney team did, and if we don't get the tech situation under control, then that's it. We're done. We have to take a serious look at the types of contracts, the types of people who are being hired to develop the software for these elections, for voter tracking and proper beta testing, proper managers, all those things. If that's not going to be done in 2014 and beyond, look out.
Well, yeah, Mark, we've all experienced that, because as grassroots activists, the limited technological capacity has been a huge frustration, and I'm glad that you brought that up. And what's fascinating to me, though, is this idea of avoid, you know, in politics, a comfort zone is a death zone. If you get comfortable with the way things are and what's going on, then your party has now just got swept downriver. So, you know, there is going to be conflict within the party, because the fact is that if you're not bleeding hard in training, you're going to get killed in combat. And this kind of, you know, RNC winter meeting, the conventions, the primaries, the caucuses, this is supposed to be where we blood each other's noses so that the best can rise to the top and we can actually take on the opposition with a vigor that will bring us to victory and put the principles that the party alleges to stand for in place. So, you know, what can our listeners do in the next, you know, 16 hours or whatever it is to help you make this case to apparently people who seem to be sympathetic but somehow haven't quite gotten to the point of comfort or urgency, I should say, the point of urgency with coming out and supporting you practically. I mean, I would assume that someone like Morton Blackwell from the Commonwealth of Virginia would be very much in support of you after how he was treated, you know, as a member of the Rules Committee down there. What can people do?
Yeah. You know, at this point in time, I don't know if there's a lot people can do, because I think, you know, that the RNC members were a day out from the election, and they're pretty set where they're at, and they're not going to break ranks. They're just not. I hate to say that. But if you want to do something, you know, I would say, you know, if you want to call your state party and get a hold of these RNC members and say, hey, you know what, all Mark needs is one state, two members, and in each state there's three members, a state chairman and a committee man and a committee woman. And I need two of the three in one more state. So basically what I say to people when I talk is, hey, you know, you don't even have to vote for me, but if you simply support, fill out the one piece of paper, the one page piece of paper that says, you know, I support Mark Willis to be on the ballot. And you get two people to do that from one state, and it's game on. So, you know, we'll see what happens tomorrow, and it's not over yet. I'm an optimist. There's a few people I have to talk to. I'm not going to say what states, but there are a couple that I'm talking to, and we will see what happens.
Well, Mark, I have a question.
I would say we have in the state of Texas, we have a pretty popular state party chairman in Steve Unisteri, who has been very grassroots friendly, and he was welcoming of the Ron Paul supporters at the Texas convention, and he actually provided an opportunity for Ron Paul to come speak at the convention, which was unscripted and was one of the most well-attended events actually at the convention. So he is our chair, so he's going to be on the RNC. I would hope that people would contact him and encourage him to support your candidacy, at least to get you on the ballot, so that there could be a vote on it rather than rubber stamping a leadership that I think has failed. And then the two other members are Robin Armstrong, who I actually met at the convention. He was at my Senate district convention. I voted for him. And you can find his contact information if you go to the Republican Party of Texas. Under National Committee Members, he's listed there, Committeeman Robin Armstrong. And the other one is Committeewoman Bora Van Dormolen. And hopefully they would be supportive as well, because I think the important thing is to have a vote, have a debate about what the direction of the party. And the choice of chairman should not be a rubber stamp event. It should be a time to have a discussion about the direction of the party, and getting your name onto the ballot is, I think, crucial to sparking that debate within the party. And of course, hopefully, I think you would be a far better chairman than Reince Priebus certainly has been, because, you know, for 2 years I didn't hear from the guy, and then all of a sudden he sort of emerged from whatever hole he was in, where he was balancing budgets left and right but not doing much to advance the party, and that came back to bite us on Election Day in 2012 because we didn't win. So you need the chairman to be someone who can be a front man, to go out there and advocate for the cause and inspire the grassroots, rather than somebody who can sit in the background and, you know, work with a balance sheet.
Yeah, there's really, I think, three components to being a chairman. There's, the fundraising and the balance sheet, okay? Then there's the national media, right, the spokesperson. There's also just the manager, the management of the RNC itself. What kind of manager are you? So those three components make a good chair, and you really need someone who can walk in and do all three. So it's a tough job. You know, most people wouldn't want it. You know, it's thankless.
Yeah.
especially when you lose. But I come in with a background in, you know, information systems management, you know, software development, things like that, knowing and being in the Army, you know, and having soldiers underneath me in counterintelligence. I went to Haiti and Bosnia in the 90s. Actually, Bora was at our press conference today. She showed up, and she asked me some questions. We had a good back and forth, and we talked afterwards, and I found out she was in the Army, and I told her some Army stories. So we swapped some Army stories. And I said, thank you for asking me some pointed questions, Bora. It makes me a sharper pencil, you know, when I'm up there. So, I don't know where Texas is going to fall in line. I don't know if they're all going to fall in line for Ryan's. I just don't know. So maybe you guys would want to call them and find out where they're at. I haven't talked to Robin. I haven't seen Steve here. So, you know, I don't know. It might be worth calling him, but I tend to believe that maybe most people are still going to, you know, vote for Reince, and this seems to be the general trend that's going on within most states in the RNC.
It seems like organizational paralysis, and that's what concerns me, is that there's this, well, we've had this horrible defeat, so let's rally around the flag and our current leaders and say, well, they did the best they could, and then we'll go forward to victory from there. But it doesn't work that way. It's really, you know, Haley Barbour was talking about after this defeat, we need to have a proctology exam and all this kind of stuff. And that seems to have fallen by the wayside. Now everybody's just like, well, rally around the leadership and tell them what a great job they did, and, let's forget all their flaws and, you know, point out where what their strengths are, and hopefully that will lead us to victory. And I just don't think that's a winning strategy.
No,
it isn't.
It's gone. It's over. If this is the mindset that they're going to adopt, it's over because they've already lost millions of people. It was in the vote totals. This is not a joke. I do not understand how we can be having this conversation. I'm almost like I'm in another point in time talking about something that hasn't happened yet. This has already occurred. Mark, you know this stuff. You were part of it. You were part of the abuse, the crime, the corruption. And I have so much respect for what you've done, the fact that you've gone down there, that you're facing the thing. But listening to what you're talking about, I can't believe that people don't already know this stuff, that they haven't already soul-searched themselves. Newt Gingrich wrote an incredible piece on everything the GOP. I mean, here's the guy that led the Republican Revolution. You know, he's got a mind like a computer. He wrote a massive, I don't know if you've read it, it's worth reading because he hits every point in there. We actually took three shows to go through that whole report that Newt wrote. It took three shows, radio shows. And when you read it and when you go through line by line by line, you know what you keep hearing? Ron Paul. You keep hearing, you know, the Ron Paul Liberty Movement, the grassroots, the Tea Party. That's what Newt kept saying over and over. This is what you got to do. This is what you got to do. And all you got to do is just remove all those words and put in grassroots. And that was the whole report, was about all of that. Well, that's what the RNC destroyed in this party, the conservatives, the right wing, the grassroots, the Liberty Movement, and the Tea Party people. How in the hell, excuse my French, do they think they can move forward against the Obama machine, which is phase two is already launched, and it is more sophisticated than what they had to run Obama against the worthless one? You know what I'm saying? It's more. I've looked at the videos. I've read the data on it. Their machine is up, running. And they've taken their community organizing grassroots to even a higher level, and that machine's already in place for 2014. And we're sitting here going, Priebus, are you flipping kidding me?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but this is frustrating as hell to me.
One of the dangers, Chris, I think is, and Mark has alluded to this earlier, and I keep seeing this in the press, is this idea that the GOP is behind on the technology, which we are, but there seems to be this coalescence around the idea of let's blame ORCA for why we failed, and that if the party comes up with this killer app, you know, we're going to be able to win elections in the future. Well, the killer app is a great set of ideas that rallies the people to come support
people.
You. The killer app in 2010, we probably had better applications in 2012 than we did in 2010, but we won in 2010. We didn't win in 2012, and the software may or may not have had a marginal thing to do with it, but really what happened was people were dissatisfied, and let's just say it because we've been saying it here for a long time, with Mitt Romney. I don't know a single Republican down here who said, I'm excited about Mitt Romney. They all said, well, I don't really like the guy, but he's our guy and he's better than Obama. That's what everyone said, and nobody wanted to vote for the guy. He wasn't their first choice. He wasn't their second choice, but when they had no choice, they felt like they had to go vote for the guy because they didn't know what else to do, but they were demoralized by it.
But a lot of people didn't vote for him.
A lot of
that's the problem.
Millions.
The show that you that went over that memo, which was intended by Tex and Rex, but we never got to it, was Bard's Logic. And Robert, you're on the line with us, but before I let you chime in, the thing is that What's happening here, Mark, is that I can't stress how important it is for you, if possible, to convey to these people that no matter what they're thinking and who they're talking to within their own little cliques, the people out here who are going to be voting aren't putting up with this kind of thing. I mean, the only good thing I can see about keeping these rules in place, and it's certainly not the good way to go about it, is, you know, trying to remove John Boehner as Speaker of the House. Well, that's likely to happen in 2014. Unfortunately, rather than getting someone like Speaker Newt Gingrich, we're going to end up with a reprise of Nancy Pelosi if these people don't get their act together.
Yeah, and you know, I've been saying that, you know, from the very beginning that, you know, all the things like you're saying, all the things we talk about privately or amongst ourselves, the people at the RNC need to get the message and they need to go public with it, like I'm doing. Because, you know, right now I'm pretty much a lone voice. Okay, so be it. Someone has to start it. Someone has to light that spark to where others up there will feel emboldened and more secure. Hey, you know what? Okay, Mark's spoken up. They haven't, you know, taken him to task too much. He survived, you know. Well, maybe I should speak up too. Like I said, we're running out of time, but you can't make this body make the body do the right thing overnight. Now, they have to get there, but we're running out of time. So I don't know what the magic formula is other than to just talk to people one-on-one and educate and say, you know, find it within yourself to stand up for those things that you know deep down in your heart are wrong with this party that need to change. And, you know, like I said throughout the whole campaign, you know, decentralize the RNC. We've got to decentralize it and give more power back to the states, state parties. Fire all the consultants at the RNC and take that money and give it back to the states. And that's a point that Newt has talked about. Newt's talked about that. Rush has talked about that. You know, there's certain things that we can do that I've talked about today in my press conference, and I've been saying all along, is that if you want the grassroots and the rank and file to stick around and, you know, not just be in the party but open up their wallet and give you some money, you have got to show some good faith effort that you are making some changes, substantive changes that actually are meaningful, that show that there's new management in town and they're making some serious changes based upon the wishes and the respect of the rank and file. But until we get that, people are going to keep their wallets closed and they're probably just going to sit back. Maybe they'll come out in November and vote, and maybe they won't. I am beating that drum. I'm trying to tell them, guys, you've got to look at this differently. You know, the RNC is not just a mutual admiration society. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Do we stand for something? And if we stand for something, what is it? And how do we push that agenda forward? Because, you know, if we are the party of liberty, equality, and equal opportunity for everyone and favoritism for none, then let's start acting like it.
Mark, that's perfectly well put, and we appreciate it. And real quick, and I don't want to tire you out because you got a big day tomorrow, so we don't want to keep you on here too long. I just want to make sure that Robert gets to maybe chat with you real briefly. But I think that one of the points that needs to be stressed, and I don't know how, you know, if you're going to say this or if you're going to find the opportunity, but very simply, I can tell you that millions of us are not going to turn out in November.
Yeah.
Because we believe in federalism, we believe in state sovereignty. These are conservative principles, and if the party doesn't mirror those principles within its own federal organization, we cannot expect candidates of that party to implement that when they go to Washington D.C. or even to push forward any kind of nullification laws from their state level. So by setting up the party in a structure that's contrary to the conservative principles of the party, they're telling me you should have no confidence in us. And as a voter who says, okay, well, I can't have confidence in them, I'm going to go find somebody else somewhere else who actually believes in federalism and states' authority. So that it's key, because the simple fact is that most people in this country identify as conservatives, and conservatives should be winning overwhelming victories. So these losses have to be caused. I do not put these losses as a cause of the massive machine that Obama has. These losses are occurring because of the massive dysfunction within the Republican Party, and like you say, we're running out of time. Robert, why don't you go ahead and chat with Mark real quick, and then we'll see how long he wants to stick around, but I don't want to tire you out for tomorrow.
Sure, certainly, and thank you very much, Rex and Tex, for having me on the show. And I'd like to start off with thanking you, Mark, for your fight for conservatism, liberty, and the grassroots, and trying to bring those aspects back to the Republican Party. I know it's a gigantic feat in trying to do that, and you know, as we've heard a lot on the shows, that it could very well be, the last legs of the Republican Party if that does not happen. You know, we talked a lot about the mass exodus. But, you know, barring, Friday and moving forward, especially with the, re-election of, Boehner as the Speaker of the House, where do you see the Republican Party moving forward, when it comes to, if indeed, if Lance Priebus does, unfortunately, get reelected as the RNC chair, what do you see for the future of the Republican Party? I came in later, so if this is a duplicate question, I apologize. I know we talked to Mark, brought it up, talked about it last night. So I'd like to see what you have on that.
Yeah, that's a good question, and that has yet to be seen because, with Boehner kicking the conservatives and the libertarians off the key committee assignments, not a good start. And who's to say they're not just going to keep raising the debt ceiling and raising it and postponing it and raising it? I don't see any bright light ahead of us on that. I don't know what the end game and how far we can do that, but I don't see the guys on Capitol Hill really doing anything but just kicking the can down the street and then eventually buckling it like they always do. I have no reason to think otherwise. I don't want to burst your bubble.
You're right.
No. Yeah, and then if that happens, it's going to be more like a one-party system. At least that's how I see it.
Yeah, and so within the party, again, people talk to me on the side after the resolution committee, and they said, hey, because, at this meeting, we did not have the standing rules committee set up, so there couldn't be any rule changes or amendments or anything if they wanted to because there was no rule committee. The next meeting in the spring will probably have the standing rules committee, and that is where, these changes can take place. I'm not sure exactly what's going to happen with the rules, but I'll tell you this: if these rules don't get set straight, and one rule in particular that's being overlooked is Rule 40. There's been all these calls. Okay, you guys are probably familiar with Rule 40. That's from five state plurality to an 8-state majority to be on the ballot at the convention. Okay, if that holds and that doesn't change, it makes it nearly impossible for a grassroots rank-and-file candidate to get on the ballot at the next 2016 convention. Almost impossible. So if those things don't change, we are facing a future where, if we don't get the tech under control, if we don't make good faith efforts to decentralize the party, if we don't change the rules, if we don't do competitive bidding on contracts like we're supposed to hire the right people for contracts over $100,000.
Well, that's one of the other major issues is the party seems to be infested with these contractors who are just making a quick buck off all these campaigns, telling them what they want to hear, anything, as long as the contracts keep coming. And the candidates, of course, I worked in Washington for many years. And they come in and they see all this sort of, you get treated like royalty if you're a congressman or a political appointee, and it goes straight to their head. They think all of this is for them, and they want to surround themselves with yes-men who tell them how wonderful they are. Meanwhile, your yes-men are picking the pocket of the party, and the party is going down to failure while, the consultant bandits are making off with millions. And the party's, successes in the electoral process be damned as long as they're making their money, and it's really bleeding the party dry. And then to cut off the voice of the grassroots makes it even worse because these consultants are going to be there pouring more poison into the ears of the leadership, and they're not even going to have to listen to the grassroots. If somebody from the grassroots comes up or, a delegate, they're going to say, oh, you're a nobody because we made sure that you have no power, so I'm not going to listen to you. I'm going to go listen to this money guy who's picking my pocket. And that's really problematic.
Yeah.
I start to wonder whether the RNC even cares about if there's, cares about victory, because you're going to keep the, if you had a business, we're talking about businesses, or CEO, if you have something that failed as bad as the RNC did, especially in this past election with probably one of the worst presidents in our history, get reelected and still be able to maintain their seats. That's astounding to me.
Well, one of the most ironic things is, Romney got burned for a comment where he says, I like being able to fire people who provide services to me. Well, you know, he got burned for that, but it's not actually true because he surrounded himself with a bunch of people who provided him terrible service, and he held on. And people were telling him during the summer, like, these advisors are bad. You need to get a new team. And he wouldn't do it because he trusted those people. He knew them personally and all that kind of stuff. And so he really was about the personal connection, not about who was most effective. And so he's running as being a CEO, and if you look from the outside, he didn't look like that good of a CEO either because he wasn't surrounding himself with people who could lead him to victory. He was surrounding himself with yes men.
Yeah, the best thing, looking back, I mean, the best thing I think Romney could have done, and, you know, I don't know how this is going to go over with the Romney people, but the best thing he could have done at that convention was to embrace the Gingrichs, the Paul, the Bachman, Santorum delegates. You know, let Paul speak. You know, Paul had 6 states, and he only needed 5, but they changed the rule to 8. So, you know, so anyway, if Ron Paul had been allowed to speak, you know, we all knew that he probably, you know, wasn't going to make it. But, you know, as far as victory, but to pull all the Paul delegates in together and say, you know what, we're all one big party. I need you. I need your grassroots. I need all of you to win and beat Obama. You know, we may disagree on 25%, 20% of all these things, but let's focus on the stuff that we do agree upon, and let's move forward. You know, I don't know how much of an impact that would have been, you know, a great gesture to bring them in and to say, you know, we're all in this together. And instead, they did the entire, you know, exact opposite. And they just, you know, they purged. You know, in the case of Maine, you know, I was one of the 10 delegates that got cut. So, you know, within our delegation, we had 20 delegates and 20 alternates. And one night, you know, I was the guy that, you know, proposed, you know, leading the walkout in Tampa when we walked out. I said, guys, if we can't get credentialed, then we can't be on a, you know, if there's no way we can be seated, we got to walk out. We got to boycott the convention. You know, enough's enough. And we talked about it. And then one night we got together and I said, hey, you know, how many vets do we have on this delegation? And they said, there's 8 of us. Okay, 8 vets. And how many of these vets have been cut? 7. 7 of 8 veterans were cut, myself included. So, you know, there were all these things that we found out the way we were treated that, you know, people still remember that, and America remembers that. And Republicans, you know, they remember that. A lot of people left the party after that convention. And said,
and another thing, Mark, that's interesting about that is not only are they cutting vets when the party claims to support the vets and, you know, we're sort of the patriotic party, you know, and the Democrats, you know, they never support the military. That's, you know, one of the branding issues between the two parties, right? Well, here they are cutting vets. And then, look, I believe it was the Massachusetts delegation where Ron Paul supporters managed to get something like 70% of the delegate seats out of Massachusetts, right? And so then the party went through, and I could have the state mistaken, but I think it was Massachusetts. Then the party went through, and they started eliminating anyone under the age of whatever it was, 40, 35, I forget, some arbitrary number, and anyone who was Hispanic, because they thought that they were likely to be Ron Paul supporters. Now look at the party. We need to find a way to appeal to Hispanic voters. Well, maybe you shouldn't be cutting them as delegates when they come to your convention. You know what I'm saying? I mean, the party's just completely out of its mind with how it wields power. And then it brands it as if the issue is us, the voters of the Republican Party. We're the ones who are stupid and, you know, sort of the racist, bigot, homophobes that we always get portrayed as, whereas the party is going through and our party actually appeals across race and gender lines and all the other lines that you want, and they come to the conventions, and then the party leadership gets rid of them. It's a problem.
Yeah, in Massachusetts, I'm not sure about all that, but I know that, I believe in Massachusetts, they were making them sign loyalty oaths. You know, so a lot of people had to sign loyalty oaths just to Romney,
yeah,
just to be invited. So, you know, all kinds of weird stuff going on, guys. And so, you know, all said, it was played, it was handled terribly. And, you know, who knows, lessons learned for 2016, I told a reporter today, I was interviewed, and the reporter asked me from, you know, a different magazine, said, you know, what happens, Mark, if these rules don't change? You know, if for somehow they survive? You know, if things don't change and everything pretty much stays the way it is, And I said, you know, the party's doomed. I hate to say it, but it's doomed. We have to change it.
Yeah, I mean, this is the ninth inning, and it's the bottom of the ninth inning, Mark. And I mean, the fact is, if you can't find some ball players out of those 168 to let you hit a home run tomorrow, your conscience will be clear. But I don't think that this party will survive another couple of election cycles. It'll be the Whig Party.
Not against these guys. Not against the Democrats and the Obama and that machine. You guys got it right.
Yeah,
it's no joke. It is no joke. How those guys are.
Is somebody told these people this? Because this is what they need to hear. They need to hear flat up. You lost millions of votes because of what happened to the primary, because you picked the absolutely worst guy you could have picked, and what happened at the RNC convention. That's why you lost. That was millions of votes. The question is, when people find out, and you can be straight up and honest, because I know you've been out there on the street talking to people. I know that, you know, you're Ron Paul delegate, so you know how people feel. People are PO'd about what they experienced. And they need to hear, and I can tell you from us and our influence, because we've been on this thing 24/7, oh, my God, the whole primary, actually, and hearing you talk and the absolute frustration I have right now over the idiocy that these people don't even know what's going on in the party, you know, because I live out here amongst the people, and I have groups and do radio shows and things like that. If they don't make a change tomorrow and quit doing, because all they're doing is perpetuating the same crimes that they did through the whole primary through the convention, by keeping you out, by not opening up the vote. You know what I'm saying? I mean, come on, man. There's usually four or five, six people running, and so what's going to happen when people like us who are really frustrated right now start opening up on the RNC, because we've held on. We know people in the Libertarian Party. We know people in the Constitution Party. We've interviewed these people. A lot of good friends of ours are in these other parties. It won't take much for us to turn and go, okay, folks, RNC's dead. This is what we need to do. We can influence millions of people. I mean, honestly, I'm not trying to, you know, as a threat. I'm just being honest with you, Mark. We're all the same type of people. You know, we're all grassroots, conservative, you know, liberty movement people. But if the three of us, or the four of us, I'm sorry, you were text, you know, turn and start broadcasting with the intent to absolutely pull more people from the party, we will ultimately affect millions of people. That's what they need to hear, because I'm not happy with what I'm hearing. No, I'm not. It's not that I'm not happy with you. You're my hero. But the way you're being treated and the lack of any kind of clarity that these guys are even going to attempt to wake up and learn from their lessons, why would I waste any more of my time and energy on the GOP?
Yeah, and I think your points are valid and well placed. And all I can say is I'm only one of 168 people. You know, I'm not the chairman enough. I'm not even on a committee. You know, I'm a new member who is up there, you know, raising these issues and doing the best I can to raise it to anyone who will listen, in the hallways, in meetings, over breakfast, over a cup of coffee. I find a lot of one-on-one is the way to do it, you know, when no one else is around. If they're more like them. But, you know, that's a lot of people to get to. And some of them are just not going to budge. So it's a huge effort, but I'm not alone. I do have some cohorts up there that are on my side, and together we can try. All I can say is we can try, and we'll do the best we can. But your message of what you said, the frustration and disenfranchisement within the caucuses and the primaries, you know, I'm letting them know all that. I sound like a broken record, maybe, but they're hearing it. What they choose to do about it, you know, I'm hearing that they, you know, there's a serious push now to get these rules done right, at least changed, you know, this year, and we'll see. You know,
sure,
But we don't trust the man. That's the problem. You follow what I'm getting at? Even if they change the rules to placate us, you know, and go, okay, we better change these rules because, oh, my God, we're going to lose millions of people. It's still Priebus, which means it's still the same a-holes in power, which means what the hell will they do after everybody goes, oh, okay, they changed the rules. We're all good now. He ain't my buddy. He needs to go. You see what I mean? That's the mindset of people. I know it's my mindset. I do not trust him, the rhinos, the RNC elite. I look at John Boehner, and I cannot believe he was voted back in as speaker. He has done zero to block Obama on anything. And if that's what
I'm down here
going to become,
in Texas, in the heart of conservative country, and nobody is happy with the party. So I'm in Houston, Texas, right? So if you think of what is the heart of the Republican Party, right? Most people think the state of Texas, and the heart of the Republican Party of Texas is Houston and SD7, right? So that's where I am. And nobody around here is happy with the party. And during the entire election, I saw one Romney Ryan bumper sticker in Texas. That should tell you something. People are getting really demoralized by what's going on. And what worries me is all I hear about is how the party thinks they had a technological glitch that caused their loss in 2012. And if they come up with the killer app, you know, they're going to win in 2014. Well, look, your killer app is run a conservative that actually believes in conservative principles and can articulate them. And then it doesn't matter what kind of software you have around that. You'll win.
Yeah. Yeah, that's one of the points of my plan, too. One of the points of my plan is to advocate conservatism. Don't be afraid. Don't be afraid to speak about how conservatism is the way out, is the roadmap out of the madness. You know? So that's one of the points is to educate. Get smart on conservatism. If you don't know all the specific facts of a certain issue, get smart on it and then advocate. And don't be afraid to stand your ground, you know, when the liberals call you out and all kinds of names and things, you know. Don't back down, you know. But guys, I got to jump off here and get going.
Okay. Hey, we appreciate it. Stay in touch with us. Let us know what's going on.
Thank you.
Sure, thanks a lot for being on the show, and we really want to support what you're doing. And no matter what happens, you know, we're in your corner, and we think what you're doing is great.
Yeah, there's no reason why, you know, over the course of time for me to not just pop in and give you updates on what's going on at the RNC from time to time, just so you guys are kind of aware of what's happening. I'd be more than willing to do that.
Absolutely, Mark. Tex and Rex, we broadcast 10 p.m. Sundays, and anytime you need to get a message out, let us know. And then periodically throughout the week, you've got Bars Logic Political Talk with Robert Jetter and also Chris, Coalition of Freedom. So just hit us up and let us know, because if we all work together, because, look, every one of those 168 members represents a constituency from back home. However, you represent a vaster constituency that's more diverse, more motivated, more active, and younger, and prepared to move forward in a way that if they listen to you, they may save the Republican Party. And if they don't, those vast numbers are going elsewhere. So, you know,
yep,
I hate to put that burden on you, but thank you for standing up and grabbing the reins on this one. We appreciate it.
Yeah, and as we've said, you know, in some ways, I'm trying to throw them a lifeline. You know, I'm trying to throw a lifeline.
Absolutely.
You know? So, let's see if they take it. I'll stay in touch, guys.
I hope they get it.
Thanks, Mark.
All right. Good night.
God bless them. We'll be helping all we can. Thanks.
Take care, guys. And good luck.
All right. Bye bye.
Well, go ahead and do your closeout, and then I want to cover that thing on this survey.
Yeah, that's fine. I just wanted to let everybody know that was a national committeeman from Maine, Mark Willis, challenging Rince Priebus for RNC chair. Nevada's in his corner. Maine is in his corner. We need two brave committeemen, committeewoman, chairman from one more state by 5 o'clock tomorrow to get his name on the ballot so that other people can vote for him. He needs 85 votes to win. It may be a long shot, but in our history, since before even the writing of the Constitution, before the Declaration of Independence, we've done more with less. So, you know, let's be American. Let's be conservative. Let's get this done. All of you out there, email, tweet, Facebook, and call your state chair, committee man, and committee woman. And also take a look at on Step Down Now, the other states that haven't committed. Mark obviously couldn't tell us where the states were leaning, but I would tell you call Texas, call Idaho, call New Mexico, call Maryland, Missouri, just hammer it, because Mark is throwing the Republican Party a lifeline. And if they don't pick it up tomorrow, they can rearrange the deck chairs, but the GO ship is going down. Tex, if you want to add anything, and then to Trog.
Well, yeah, I would just say, look, contact your state committeemen. And for those of you calling in from Texas, and we are aware that we have quite a few listeners from Texas, your committeemen, one is Robin Armstrong. He is robarmstr at hotmail.com. Give him a ring. Let him know that you want to see someone besides Ryan Priebus be chairman. Also, we have Committeewoman Bora Van Der Molen, and she is, looks like, castle at vvm.com. So send her an email or Twitterate her as well. And then, of course, Steve Munisiri is our illustrious state chairman. Let him know. And if nothing else, the party after this election, this grueling election, which was a demoralizing defeat for the party, certainly was for me, we deserve a debate over the direction of the party. We can't just rubber stamp Ryan Priebus and put him in and then, you know, do the George Bush stay the course, 1,000 points of light thing, close our eyes and hope everything goes well. We need to have a serious discussion about the party, where it's going and what's happening, because you're seeing what's happening in the media. The party leadership wants to take the party further to the left because they think there's some place between socialism and surrender to socialism that's going to be the golden point for the party to locate itself, and that's where victory is. That's not where victory is. That's the political valley of death that they're heading for,
mm-hmm.
and someone is going to have to turn them around and get them out of there. Otherwise, this is an organization completely going off the cliff that, as far as I'm concerned, if they stay on this path, you know, they're just going into oblivion, and we'll never hear from these guys again. They're heading for the history books because this is the leadership that will have killed that party. And nobody remembers who was chairman of the Whig Party when it went down. All they remember is Abraham Lincoln's the guy who started the Republican Party. So
Reince
Priebus,
right.
His name is not destined for the history book. If it is, it's as a failed leader of the Republican Party. So
yeah, he'll be in the management books as how not to run any organization.
Yes, exactly. What happens when you make an accountant your visionary?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, my God. No kidding. Wow.
Well, everything that Tex just said is absolutely right, and the people from Texas he mentioned, please contact them, and we will be posting links to that information on the Tex and Rex Show Facebook page, so check us out on Facebook, the Tex and Rex Show. Also, and make sure you like the page so you get times that we're broadcasting. Usually, Tex and Rex are broadcasting Irreverent, Relevant, and Radioactive Conservatism, 10 p.m. Eastern Sundays. But every once in a while, we get a hair up our rear ends and decide to do a midweek show like today. So if you like our Facebook page, you'll hear about it. And also, make sure if you're in Blog Talk Radio, click under the show icon for follow, and you'll get notifications in your Blog Talk Radio profile. And the other two callers on the line also have Block Talk Radio shows. You can follow them. One is Coalition of Freedom. The other is Bard's Logic Political Talk. Chris from Coalition of Freedom is up next. So, Chris, fire off what you were going to talk about. And we've got about 26 minutes of live show left.
There is a program, Growth and Opportunity Project, which is, you know, Priebus put this out there. Thinking that, you know, this is how we're going to win in the future. And he has a survey, and I put the link in the chat, and it's also on the group. I'm keeping it up near the top, and basically, you know, you fill it out, and then you go in there, and then you can answer a bunch of questions. This is your opportunity to tell these people what you think, you know, because they're obviously, I'm sorry, but when I heard Mark talking about, people were like, wow, I didn't know that. Are you kidding me? People are the heads of state chair committees, and they don't know what occurred at the RNC convention. They either are the stupidest idiots in politics in this country, or they're liars. There's no way that any human being could not know what those rules did, what happened through the primary, and not know that Romney lost and Priebus was part of it. Are you serious? I mean, honestly, you've got to step back and look at this thing. These people are the kind of people who are going to lead the party to more failure if that's how dumb they really are. And I can say that because I'm not running for any position. I don't have to be not nice like Mark does. You know, it just astounds me that after this long, a year of this crap, and this is the highest level of enlightenment these people have, they don't even know what the hell is going on in the party. It's just mind-boggling. You know, I mean,
well, listen,
to burn the Republican process to the ground at the convention, and you don't even understand that? You know, so fill out that form and tell the RNC what the hell you think. Go ahead.
Yeah, Chris, this is just like Congress, okay? These party people are talking to other party people, their compatriots in other states, and these congressmen are talking to each other. This is the same mistake that any company that does not cater to its customers but talks to its newly hired MBAs fresh out of school is going to fail. There's an interesting show. I don't know what channel it's on because I watch it on the Internet. It's called Undercover Boss. And some of these CEOs of large companies, the one I saw was Waste Management, these CEOs will actually spend a week in disguise working the lowest rank jobs in their company where the company meets the customer to find out how he's doing in his role as CEO, and they always learn things that they never saw. So when these party committee people and party leaders and state central committees and congressmen and senators of the party only talk to each other and never actually pay attention to those of us who are out here in the real world whose policies their policies affect us, they will never know what we want, and they will never know how we're going to vote. Yeah, they can always rely on, you know, maybe half of the sheeple just following blindly whatever party affiliation they traditionally follow, but you won't win that way, and you certainly won't win the future that way. So, you know, get your heads out of your asses and start paying attention. Mark Willis knows what he's talking about, and he's the one who can lead you out of the woods.
Yeah. Seems like a really great guy.
And qualified.
Absolutely.
Army counterintelligence?
That's one of the things. I mean, look, right now what the Republican Party needs, and particularly the Republican voter, is inspiration. Where is our inspirational leadership? I mean, I saw where Paul Ryan today, he gave some press, well, maybe it was a couple days ago, but he gave some talk with the press for the first time. Now that Barack Obama has been inaugurated, he feels that it's safe for him to speak his thoughts on the election. Whose feelings are you sparing at this? I mean, say your piece, man, for God's sakes, right? But he felt, I have to maintain silence until Barack Obama is sworn in. Why? What was going to happen if you said something earlier? So I don't know. I figure he's just trying to get a story straight, right? But he talked about how they needed a killer app and all that kind of stuff. didn't blame Mitt Romney. Thought they had solid ideas for the country and everything.
Bullshit.
You know, and I... Romney didn't have any ideas. His idea was RomneyCare, which is what he was running for president for in 2008 in the first place. And when he announced RomneyCare, that was going to be his springboard to the presidency, and Barack Obama beat him to it and enacted RomneyCare, but he called it Obamacare. And then Mitt Romney's like, oh, I would repeal and replace it. Why would you do that? You were going to run to implement it.
It starts with an O, not an R. That's why.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
you just changed the name of it.
He's completely an unbelievable candidate to begin with. But then he talked about how Romney is uniquely positioned because he has no aspirations to run for office again, probably because he has one of the worst track records in electoral history in the United States. of running and losing. That's probably why he has no aspirations, because what is the point? But that uniquely positions him to be one of the leaders of the Republican Party nowadays. I mean, what? His record of abject failure over two decades in Republican electoral politics uniquely positions him, because he's finally given up, because he faced defeat, which he probably should have done earlier, and we all would be better off for it. Now that uniquely positions him to be a leader of the Republican Party. This is an organization that desperately seeks after failure and rewards failure over and over and over again and vociferously punishes success. It's a deeply dysfunctional organization, and it needs to be fixed.
And isn't that something that Rush Limbaugh says? That, and I'm not a big fan of Rush by any stretch, especially how he conducted himself during the primaries, but isn't that what he says that the Democrats do is his reward failure? So once again, it seems like the Republican Party are just falling in line, turning to just another wing of the Democratic Party.
Well, you don't hear the Democrats. You don't hear the Democrats saying we need to be more like the Republicans, do you? So there you go.
Well, and also, you know, I think the, you know, your talk about earlier about them not saying, you know, Chris and Rex and Dan, you were talking about, you know, the Republicans and the committee chairpersons, the state committee chairpersons, you know, not seeing what happened at the convention. It's like, you know, maybe the new mascot for the party, instead of being an elephant, should be an ostrich, where only all you see is the neck and their body with the head, their head in the sand. One thing that Chris mentioned earlier that I find interesting is he said, you know, that when Priebus was elected, there was like, what, five people running. I wonder, with Mark only being the only one running against him, what kind of heavy-handed tactics behind closed doors, and what kind of other pressures are being brought to bear, so that it, you know, there is only one person who is brave enough to go up against Rince Priebus. You know, I mean, we're
well,
talking
Robert,
about.
Well, Robert, you missed it at the beginning, but we were talking about the fact that Little Pubic flew out to, I'm sure at the party's expense, so that's you, Mr. and Mrs. Republican contributor, flew out to Nevada to convince the Nevada delegation to reverse their position on Mark Willis. Well, I mean, Mark Willis has two states, not three, so, and Rince Priebus has allegedly 130 members ready to vote for him, so why is he going all the way out there? So, you know, yeah, they're pulling out all the stops on this one because they want the same faux unanimity, I believe that's the word that Tex used earlier, that they faked at Tampa. They want the same thing at the RNC winter meeting to say, yeah, the Republicans are united, we're all for Priebus, blah, 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 blah. Well, you know what? That might actually be true. You know, half the Republican Party probably feels that way. And the interesting thing about UHAF, who actually believe that, congratulations, because pretty soon, if you don't elect Mark Willis tomorrow or on Friday, pretty soon, instead of being 50% of the party, y'all are going to be 100% of the party, a party that's half the size it used to be and that'll never win another victory. But you can claim unanimity, no civil war, and that you're 100% united in failure.
You know, the quickest way to oblivion is an ever-increasing share of an ever-declining market. Slow but sure, down the tubes. Pretty soon you'll have 100% of all the rhino vote, but there won't be any rhinos. There's not enough rhinos to get you guys elected, and that's what's happening. That's why you're in organizational decline.
Well, and that's why I wonder if they care if they're in decline. It's something that believe, you know, it seems as if they do not care because they keep doing the same thing, even though, I mean, as you guys pointed out, I mean, how stupid can they be to not see this decline? And if indeed they are seeing it, why are they not doing anything to stop it if they are not, you know, just, you know, apathetic on the downcline or the decline?
Well,
I think Obama,
there's a couple reasons.
Obama,
go ahead, Chris.
I think Obama has promised them seats on his new council at the UN. Go ahead.
Blue ribbon panel. Well, I would say
that's blue, blue helmet panel.
Yeah, the blue panel.
Yeah, there you go.
One is, I think these people, they get there and they feel that, wow, I really am better than everybody else. I was on Greta tonight. I said all sorts of things, and I felt wonderful about it. And I really am the smartest guy in the room. And all these grassroots people who are telling me are wrong, that I'm wrong, they're wrong. And so I'm going to get rid of them, and now I feel even better because now that strokes my ego. And now I don't have to brook dissent, so I've insulated myself from the voices of the people. I mean, this is like Louis XIV time, right? That's what's going on. And the other thing is...
L'espace, c'est moi.
Yeah. And the other thing is, it could just be basic malice, you know? They're just... They don't like the Republican voter, the typical Republican voter, what they consider, because it's embarrassing in Washington circles, and I know because I lived in Washington for 10 years. They don't. They just view you guys as backwater idiots who don't know anything, and they're the smartest people in the room because they were on student council in high school, and everybody told them how smart and bright they were and how they had this big political future, and now it's come true because they're in Washington, D.C. Then it must all have been right. And all those other people that they went to school with must really be as stupid as they thought. And so they don't want, you know, you following them there, telling them what to do. They want to hang out with their new smart Washington friends who all come out of, you know, these pointy-headed schools with all these theories about whatever and how Keynesianism is going to change everything. When you can look at these models, you can tell straight out that this would never work. Who came up with this? This doesn't work. This is human nature doesn't work this way. Keynesianism does not work. It works for a little while, and eventually the bills all come due, and then it all falls apart. Just go ask Europe. Go ask Rome. Go ask, just look at human history. It always falls apart. Governments always do this, and it never works over the long term. But they'll keep doing it.
Oh, it's I mean, look, we've been on the air since June. You know, how many friggin' times have we told them, hey, if you do this, this is gonna blow up in your face, and then what happens?
Mm-hmm.
It blows up. You run Romney, you'll lose. Boom, you lost. You don't listen to Ron Paul, boom, you'll lose, you lost. Don't listen to Newt Gingrich on strategy, you're gonna lose, you lost. I mean, everything, you know, and look, today they voted, you know, to extend the debt ceiling through May, okay? So basically they just borrowed another 5 months' worth of funny money, putting us further in hock to the Federal Reserve, you know what? You're going to applaud them because they kept the full faith and credit. Full faith and credit, my ass. The Republican Party has no full faith and credit. The government has no full faith and credit. The country is going bankrupt, and these people are being fucking polite to each other. I mean, you know, fuck polite. We don't have time to be polite. The country's going down, and the only party that's in a position to truly be the opposition party is capitulating on every fucking thing that they're doing. Listen to Newt Gingrich. He said it clearly. I think one of the great problems we have in the Republican Party is that we don't encourage you to be nasty. We encourage you to be neat, obedient, loyal, and faithful, and all those Boy Scout words, which would be a great around a campfire, but are lousy in politics. This is politics, and you're talking about the fate of a country, a nation, 300 and some million people, and you're pussyfooting around not being rude to somebody? I mean, is Mark Willis the only man with courage enough to stand up and tell these people the truth, and do they have the ears to hear? And if not, then why the hell did you elect them to committee and chair positions? Step up, people. I mean, this isn't about, you know, your internal organizational politics. This is about rules that will either allow you to grow a party and appeal to the American, timeless American principles that most of us believe in, or you marginalize yourself, and then it's going to take us several election cycles to find a true opposition party. I mean, we're not going to spring up with a alternate party that's going to come into second place tomorrow. And in the meantime, what you've got is a well-organized commie Chicago machine that's going to roll over and possibly destroy the very fabric of this country. And who are we going to blame? Obama? I'm not going to blame Obama. I mean, even when Obama was running in 08 on, quote, Reagan's platform, if anybody had even an inkling, a modicum of critical thinking, you knew what he was about, and you knew what he was going to do. But I blame the Republicans. I blame Mitt Romney, Karl Rove, Ginsburg, Boehner, Priebus, and every single one of you 167 committee people who do not vote for Mark Willis on Friday, every single one of you. And on this show, we're going to call you out by name. We're going to tell people where they can find you, and you're going to have your email box flooded. Your phone will never stop ringing. Your Facebook page will be filled with posts. You will have to go into communication hiding. And then imagine trying to campaign for anything ever again with that many people knowing that you caused the demise of the United States by killing the conservative movement of the Republican Party. How's that, pussies?
Amen.
Well, Rex, I think what you're losing sight of, though, I mean, you're talking about the election and Romney and all this other stuff, but Romney did great in that first debate, and that was what was important. Remember how he kept his chest always focused at Obama, and every word out of his mouth was oil can, because he couldn't turn. I mean, that's what's killing the party. Remember this stuff? They create these media events, and they're like, oh, he did great in that debate. I've watched a lot of debates in my life, okay? I'm interested in debates. I mean, debates are like my football, okay? So if there's a debate, boom, I'm there, all right? I fell asleep in that debate, I'll be honest. So, you know, it's like a tree falling in the woods. If Romney did great in that debate, but everybody fell asleep, and if I fell asleep and I was actually interested, you know, I just don't think that people were there for it.
Did you say tree?
Did you say tree?
I like
tree.
Trees right here. Trees are the right height.
I didn't know there was a debate. I thought it was a mutual admiration meeting.
Yeah.
That was a
listen, gentlemen, we're in the last 10 minutes, so why don't we go ahead and each of you take a minute and a half. We'll start with Robert, go to Chris, Tex, and then I'll bring it home. Go for it. Robert,
yeah, thank you guys for having me into the show. It was great, and hopefully we hear from, you know, Mark again, of course, and hopefully there's victory there to be had in or on Friday. But if not, we will trudge forward. As Chris said last night, and I believe you did as well, Rex, as we've been fighting this fight probably since January of last year or June of last year as well. So, you know, with the different shows we started on and then, you know, began our own. So, of course, you know, regardless of what happens Friday, we will still be fighting on for conservatism, the grassroots and liberty. And definitely if, you know, those folks out there who decide to vote for Priebus, definitely we will get the list of names. We will put them out on the shows. We'll put them on the Facebook groups. And with their contact information, a lot of which we've probably already garnered from when we were doing some research during the primaries, we were talking to them then. So definitely we'll just have to let it, you know, be known to the people, and as you said, Rex, put it out there who caused the, you know, pretty much the death knell, in my opinion, of the Republican Party, and who are supposed to be the stalwarts of conservatism and the grassroots, but are failing miserably. And we're just going to, conservatism and grassroots going to have to go somewhere else if that happens. Thanks, guys.
Amen.
Hey, thanks, Robert. So everybody, check that out, Bard's Logic Political Talk. You're going to do it at 10 p.m., Robert?
Yeah, so I'm looking Friday night, 10 p.m.
Okay, great. Everybody check it out for post-election results. And, of course, Tex and Rex will be back 10 p.m. Sunday, although we may possibly make a sneak peek appearance on Bard's Logic Political Talk. Thanks, Robert. To you, Chris.
Well, I am I'm sitting here right now absolutely flabbergasted. I heard some stuff I didn't want to hear. I don't think that I'm surprised, I guess, once again. These people are so far out in left base, left field, they have no clue how to run a party. They have no clue. I mean, it's obvious that they didn't listen to, you know, even bother to read Newt's report that he obviously put a lot of time and effort into. That was a very, very, very well done strategic outline. Everything the man has learned and done through his lifetime was on that paper. That obviously meant crap to them. This is going to cost them. This is going to cost them big time. That's all I can say. I don't know exactly every move that I'm going to make from this point forward. I think I need some more information, you know, in terms of, you know, strategies for 2014. I really wish the alternate parties were much larger and more prepared than they are. I really do, because it would be just so great to move 5, 6, 7, 10 million people, you know, in a heartbeat. But you've got to have people to vote for, you know. That is so flipping important, you know, and I say that all the time to Libertarian Party, Constitution Party, give me people to vote for. If I don't have people to vote for, I've got to vote for a Republican, you know, if there's nobody on the damn ticket. So, you know, it's very important, and we definitely need to compile that information. Here's the key point. 2014 starts now. The election's in November 2014. Blank. It's 2013, folks, And you know what? January's almost over. It's already flying. People are positioning. You need to find out, you know, and we're trying to put all that data together. The problem is you got 435 House members, 33 senators, plus a special election. That's 469 human beings coming up for re-election in 2014. It's a lot of research. But, you know, you got to do research for yourself. We're trying to do it on the group. I've been knocked sideways with the Second Amendment thing and this, but we'll get back to that soon as things start to boil down. Yeah, our country's at stake. 2014 is important to you guys.
All right. Thank you, Chris. And everybody, please check it out on Facebook, Coalition of Freedom, and trying to grow to 500 working members by February 28th. The 500th member gets a super special prize. So really, you know, file in there. And it's going to be a huge prize. You will get your personal guest appearance on the Tex and Rex show if you're the 500th member of Coalition Freedom. So pile in.
And pile in. And a handmade tin hat by Rex.
Exactly. Tinfoil hat, handmade. I will make it myself, and I'll ship it to you. It will ship flat, some assembly required. All right. Thanks, Chris.
You bet.
Tex, my illustrious co-host. To you, we've got 3 minutes left.
Well, absolutely. I want to, you know, ring in and support what Chris was saying there, which is that the GOP right now seriously is in a state of decline. It needs new blood breathed into it. It had an opportunity to have that in two ways in this election, one of which was through the candidacy of Newt Gingrich, who disappeared from the public stage for a little bit over 10 years, at least from elected party politics. He, you know, was doing things in the background. But people were enthusiastic about Gingrich. They saw him speak. They were like, yes, I remember why I like this guy to begin with. This guy led us to success in the future. If you look at the voter turnout in South Carolina, really reinvigorated the Republican Party. And people were excited and enthusiastic about this. People were calling me after the election in South Carolina and telling me, oh, my God, you were right. Newt Gingrich, he won in every demographic and all this. You know, he blew the thing out and he was doing great. But you know what? The party won't brook that because that smells like success. And that smells like success that wasn't paid for. Reince Priebus didn't get paid for Newt Gingrich's success, so we got to shut that down. And the other way that new blood and new enthusiasm was being infused into the party was through the Liberty Movement and through Ron Paul. Newt Gingrich worked with Ron Paul while he was Speaker of the House. Ron Paul was the conscience of the House, they said. So he had a history of working together with Ron Paul. And Ron Paul's bringing all these new people into the Republican Party, okay? So when I was young and I was in college, we always struggle with the fact that the Republican Party never appealed to the youth vote, right? So it's always fun to go to a party in college. We're sitting there talking to a bunch of people who don't really know anything about politics, and what they do know is that the correct answer is to say that you're Democrat, and if you say you're Republican, you are whatever the scarecrow is that the media has created, which never bothered me because I could always articulate what I thought, but, you know, it's never really a fun way to spend an evening. So now we have the youth vote, and people are fired up, and, hey, now we can change that, and with the youth vote, which is what Obama had, we could start winning some victories, but you know what? The Republican Party's not actually interested in victory. What it's interested in is control. And control over the grassroots and control over the message. And really it's about who scratched my back in terms of who paid the most money and gave the most money to my campaign or my candidacy for this office or that office or whatever. What are the money guys doing? Doesn't matter what the grassroots thinks. Doesn't matter what the voter enthusiasm is. And this is a serious problem within the party. It's cancer on the party because after literally, think about this, 12 years now. We are 12 years out of the party of Reagan Gingrich. We tried with Ron Paul after Gingrich left. Ron Paul kind of picked up the mantle there, but the party would never view him as mainstream, even though Ron Paul's been in the party since the 70s. They never viewed him as a mainstream member of the Republican Party. They tried to marginalize him as much as they could, and they kept pushing rhinos forward. And the thing is, after 12 years, go talk to any Republican, anyone that you know, And I guarantee you, and you already know, they're completely demoralized about the state of the Republican Party, where it is today, and they don't like the leadership, they don't like where the party's going, and they're just ready to give up. Well, what they're really ready for, what they're saying by I'm ready to give up is, what's next? I need something new. I need another brand. I need brand X, because they're ready to switch.
And give up, we shall not. Tex, we shall not give up, and I think that that's what people need to realize. Conservatism will march forward despite the imperialist agenda. And if the Republican Party has any sense and decides to have a future, they will embrace the grassroots. They will embrace conservatives. They will embrace the people that Ron Paul brought into this party. And tomorrow you have a chance to nominate a man who will actually make this happen. So we need another state to step up. Make your calls. Call the states. Check out our page. Go to stepdownnow.com. Find your committee members. Call them. Email. Tweet to them. But make it happen. And for you 167 committee members out there, we better see Mark Willis as RNC chair on Friday, or there will be consequences, chiefly the utter defeat of the Republican Party in all the upcoming elections, which is terrible for the country. Quit screwing around, get your heads out of your asses, and do the right thing and quit being polite. This is Tex and Rex signing off.
The flames of liberty will never die.